Hallo und herzlich willkommen bei Epic Tales. Unser Gast heute ist Moorländer EDC und diese Episode ist auf Englisch. Viel Spaß dabei! Hi and welcome to the show. Our guest today is Moorländer EDC. Have fun! Equipment, Preparedness, Intelligence, Guns. Hier ist Epic Tales, der Podcast von Epic. Hi and welcome here at Epic Tales. And today, my name is Eric and my guest is, I've made some notes, EDC lover, gear enthusiast, British all over. He's a nature enthusiast and just a great guy, traveler and a duck father. Well, yeah, you know, the godfather, it's the duck father. Hi, Randy, aka Moorländer EDC. Hey, how are you?
I'm very good, thanks. Especially after that introduction. I think that's probably one of the best introductions I've ever had.
Perfect. That's the way it should be. So, definitely. Yeah, thank you for joining us. It's really great meeting you. So, you've already met with Martin and you had a little chat and I saw it on your channel and also at your channel, at the Epic channel. So, to be completely honest, so me personally, I just know your channel mm-hmm. because Martin told me, and now I'm kind of addicted because, you know, when you find a brother from another mother, it's always great, you know, and to chat. So would you like to introduce yourself a little bit to the audience here in Germany, here at the Epic Tales podcast?
Yeah, sure. So, how deep do you go? Right. So, I mean, yeah, I've always been into kind of outdoor stuff.
Yes.
Growing up in rural England, especially through the 80s, I'm sure you probably find the same. You know, it's
let me stop you right there because I think it's easier if I perhaps ask you some question because you did something because you did something very very smart right at the beginning, and I watched it today, 2018, your first video, shoot video. Yeah. I don't know if you remember, but what you did is you showed your EDC, what you wore that time, and you also told, you introduced to everyone else. And this was something I really enjoyed because it was like back then, it was 2018, like who you are. And for everyone listening, just listen to this video, you will recognize him immediately. Well, we all get a little bit older, but this is like 6 years ago. But starting from there, you said in this video that you're from North England, and that's why my first question, so you know, regarding of introducing and stuff like this, would be like Moorländer, the name. Of course, there are several more. So, so can you tell me more about this? I think this would be a good start.
Yeah, of course. So, as you say, there are lots of moors within the UK, and a moorland generally is a raised grass area. Mm-hmm. So when you go out into the hills, generally because there's just rather than there being lots of shrubs, then there's just lots of the kind of grass areas. Uh-huh. So they're the moorlands.
That is quite interesting. Like, in Germany, when we say we have like moor, well, the German mm-hmm. word moor, it also exists and it's written kind of the same. But here it's more like a swamp area. It's not like that, right?
It can be a little bit swampy, in fairness. In fact, I'm sure it probably is the same word considering... Yeah. I think a lot of English words come from the Anglo-Saxon words from a long time ago. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so you will find that there's a lot of peat soil and it can get quite swampy.
Okay. So, and there are several, I think the most famous one is the Dartmoor because of Sherlock Holmes, and you're in one of the more northern parts of England, right?
Yes, so I grew up in the Staffordshire Moorlands, which is...
Can you spell it? Because I wanted to search it, like Staffordshire, like S-T-U-F-F, or...
That's the accent. It's S-T-A-F-F-O-R-D.
Stafford, like Staffordshire. Okay, Stafford. Yes. Okay, I understand. Okay. Hmm.
Yes, that's the Staffordshire Moorlands where I grew up. Lots of being outdoors, lots of just kind of going out and adventuring and that sort of stuff.
Okay.
If you've, it's probably, we're probably about, about half an hour or so from Manchester.
Okay. Ah, okay. So this, okay, it's a Manchester area. We're not talking football here, but well, I'm not a big soccer fan. I'm not a big football fan, but I'm sure when you come from the Manchester area.
so weirdly, I'm also not a massive football fan either. My family, we grew up playing rugby. We've always been a strong rugby family. So
okay, Randy, I just stripped my finger, my ring. I want to marry you. That is awesome. I really enjoy it. So okay, yeah. I promise we will not go too deep into rugby, but I've enjoyed looking or watching rugby. The thing is, it's quite hard to watch it here in Germany. But okay. I always enjoy it when there's a tournament or something, a World Cup, and I have the chance to watch some rugby because it's just a great game. And my favorite part about it is that these huge guys, the guys from New Zealand or even in England, like the huge guys playing rugby, and then there's something happening and the small referee just tells them what to do and they say like, yes, sir, and they just turn around and do it.
It's a huge difference between what you'll see on a football pitch and what you'll see on a rugby pitch.
Exactly.
Because everybody on the rugby pitch is so respectful. Yeah. And it's exactly as you say, you refer to the referee as sir, nothing else.
Yes. I love
and
it.
If you try to, they'll just be like, no, it's whereas football, they're shouting in each other's faces. Yeah. It's like, no, you don't get that.
It's exactly like this. Yeah. So that's really, really cool. And that's great. Okay. Coming back to you, like being outdoors and, you said it in your videos that you are like a real British person because you're half Scottish or something like that, or your mother is Scottish. Is that right?
Yeah. So Scottish on my mum's side, Welsh on my dad's side and
living
English
in England
living in England. So,
okay. So who do you root for, in the rugby game and in World Cup?
It's tricky. It's tricky. Generally, whoever's playing, if England, Scotland, or Wales are playing, then I'll root for them.
Okay.
Usually, if the three are playing though, or one of the three, I'll usually go for England.
Yeah. All right. I understand. Yeah, that's cool. because we're talking about like where I live, and to be honest, I have never been to England itself. We love being in the UK, but we've been like several times in Scotland now and enjoyed that very much. And also we've been in Wales in this area, and it's just great. And so look, more England is on the list, of course. And especially what you say, this is something, perhaps you can tell us something about it before we go into deep what you're doing on your channel is being outdoors, like hunting for some people, but more enjoying nature, bird watching, go hiking, are some very British things to do, right?
It is, fundamentally. Uh-huh. I think mostly we Europeans, we've just got such large areas that we can go out into, haven't we?
Yes.
But in England, Wales, and Scotland, with access, even now, so I can look out my window and I can see straight into the moorlands. So if I wanted to go for a walk, I could just get out, and within 10 minutes, I'd be in the middle of nature.
Yeah.
Growing up, my mum and dad's house backed on to the moorlands.
Wow.
Yeah, I could walk for 2 hours, literally out of the back of my mum and dad's house, walk for 2 hours and never see anybody. There was fields, there was woods, there was rivers to swim in, and just all of that sort of stuff that I think back then was just like wholesome stuff to do. That's what kids did. They went out and they just explored and had fun. And I think... I think that kind of grounded me in wanting to be outside and wanting to stay outside as much as possible.
Being a kid, did you, when I talk with people about it, so some of them are like, yeah, my dad or my granddad brought me into this, or they got into an organization like in Germany, like the Pfadfinder, or this, I think the Boy Scouts in England. Was there something that you did, or did you do it all by yourself or with friends?
It was a mix of all of that.
Okay, cool.
So my going to North Wales. So North Wales pretty much is my second home, which is where my dad's from.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Every year,
it's beautiful day.
It is gorgeous. We'd literally get kicked out, sent to North Wales for 3 weeks, and we'd spend 3 weeks in North Wales with my nan. But when we were home, my dad was a teacher and did a lot of outward bounds kind of courses where he'd take classes of kids up to the Lake District, and they'd spend weeks camping there. So it was all just kind of part of that, plus the fact that, I don't know, in the 80s, it was just like, what are you doing inside the house? Yeah. Get out now. Here's some sandwiches. Here's a backpack.
Yeah.
And my mum would give me her watch. She'd be just like, right, okay, make sure that you're back for 6:30 because that's when supper's going to be, or that's when dinner's going to be.
Nice.
And she just kicks out the house. She'd be like, I don't want to see you.
Yeah, perfect.
Go away and just have an adventure for 4 hours and make sure you're back.
That is so great. And especially as a kid growing up, I think I'm just a tiny little bit younger. I was born in 82, but okay. Still a huge impact had, like, of course, going out, but also what kind of what did I re- I read a special book. I wanted to be Robin Hood. I read another book. I wanted to be D'Artagnan. I never wanted to be French. So that's not because nobody wants to. or watching, you know, okay, I was older then, but watching Rambo, you know, I wanted to be Rambo. And of course, and now, you know, we got the link to equipment. Then you see some things and you think, like, oh, that's what I want to have. Was it something like also back then that that you thought, like, ah, this backpack would be great? You know, like all the gear enthusiasm started back then also? Or was it just like I needed to have it?
Again, a bit of both. For me, it was the A-team. I love the A-team and the fact that they were these like soldiers, but then they just kind of went out and they solved crimes and stuff. So I think a lot of stuff does go back to that kind of thing as well. Talking with both my grandparents, they were in the war, so they would tell me these stories and they would show me their kit and all that sort of stuff, which again just got me fascinated in it. And then I'd know that my dad would go away for a weekend, or he'd go away for a week where he'd take children camping in the Lake District. So it was watching him put his bag together and all the different things, and that was it. Then I was just, I want to know more about that. What does this do, and how does this work, and why are you putting that in your bag first, and why are you taking this, and why are you not taking that? It was all that kind of fascination around that sort of stuff that really got me into it. And then on the days when my mum was like, right, get out of the house, don't come back for 6 hours. Can I take that bag? And I need some rope because we're going to make a rope swing, and I need some nails because we're going to, I don't know, try and make a house in the middle of the woods or something like that. So it all came from seeing my dad and my granddad and all of their gear, and then thinking, I need this. This is what I need in my life.
Yeah, very nice. And it sounds very romantic. And that's, you know, looking back, that's really awesome. So interestingly, your channel, you know, like 2018, you started it. It's not called Outdoor Moorlander. It's not called Bushcraft Moorlander. It's called EDC, or Moorlander EDC. So was this like more the thing to start, like, because this like EDC thing, do you know the Prometheus Design Works? Do you know this company?
Yeah.
I just had a chat with Patrick York Ma. So I had it on my, I had an interview with him, and he was like, he kind of started the EDC thing, or that's not what he said, but he said, like, you know, before this was not a thing. So how did you came up to the EDC kind of thing? So and why not being outdoor? So was it a phase in your life, and so how came it to that?
I'm not going to lie. The channel should really be called Moorlander Outdoors. And I've considered so many times thinking of doing like a rebrand. Maybe it should be a rebrand. Mm-hmm. But at the time, because my channel was new and I don't know. So it sounds really kind of weird that a lot of people are like, you know, I was EDC before EDC was a thing, but I was always interested in what's in my pocket, having a tool with me, I'm fascinated by watches.
Yeah.
So when the channel first started, it made sense for it to be an EDC channel where I looked at those kind of gadgets and different things that you carry around with you for your daily challenges. But it's certainly over the last 6 years evolved into more kind of EDC and outdoors items.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a bit of a funny one. I think originally the channel probably should have been called Moorlander Outdoors, but it's good because it has kind of evolved out of that because I love watches and I'm fascinated by bags and all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, like
so it's just kind of that's grown outwards and evolved into just something a little bit bigger.
It is a strange fascination. It is so for me, or you know, for most of our listeners, I don't think anyone can understand that. You know, you have like several backpacks and or even I had like a, you know, like the Mystery Ranch backpacks, like they cost like $1,000 or something like that. Well, I would never pay this. And if my wife listens, I've never done. And
it was free. You won it in a giveaway.
Always. It was just surplus, like 20 bucks. And, you know, and when you see like a backpack that expensive, then... You know, as someone who isn't into this whole thing, then he would probably ask something like, "Okay, can it fly? Are there some, you know, are there wheels on it or something like this?" But this fascination, and it's interesting that you mention it because it is a thing. It's like watches, things like a good pant, like a good fitting shirt, like a backpack. You know, me as a former infantry guy, like backpacks is the world because it sucks the most. But you still carry all the gear that makes you a little bit cozy in the field back in there. And that's why it's kind of like a hate-love relationship. And you're always looking for the thing. Well, but 20 miles in, everything hurts. You know, that is the assignment will never change.
If you think about it, though, if we weren't... outdoors guys and we were looking at backpacks, if we were into golf you'd spend €600 on one golf club, I'd be looking at it going, see, why, what's it, is it made from gold? No, it's a really nice golf club. Or if you were into cars, you'd be like, I've just put some new tires on and they were €500 each. You're like, what?
I love, I think it's a British or an English saying, like, the difference between men and boys is the price of their toys.
That's it, exactly.
And I love it. I love it. Every time when I hear it, I really love it. So if you needed to pick like one category, because you mentioned it like several times, is watches a thing you're interested kind of the most in, or is it just something you also are into?
I think it's something that I'm also into.
Okay.
I think the last few years I've done like quite a lot of thinking about why I like things and doing a little bit of kind of working out why I'm motivated towards certain things. And I think I might have mentioned it earlier, but when my mum would kick me and my brother out of the house, she'd go, there's some sandwiches.
Yeah.
Here's a backpack that you can put your sandwiches in.
Yeah.
And here's my watch.
Exactly. That's what you told me.
Make sure you're home by this time. And I think that sense of adventure has always been linked to having something that I can carry something in so I can go and do whatever it is that I want to do. And just a fact that I'd like to know what time it is.
Yeah.
So I think that's where it all kind of stems from.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's very cool. So sometimes I catch myself like thinking, you know, the same things, and it's quite interesting that you know, in the outdoors community, there are some more like the knife guys. Mm. There are the nylon kit guys, you know. Then there are the clothing guys. And it's in the end, we are all, you know, like something out of this. And it makes it so interesting that that like how do you develop and like how cool this community is that you can choose whatever you like to. Coming back to EDC, I'm now, so if I would show you my EDC, you know, I just stand up now and I'm wearing shorts, so I've not even, okay, we both have shorts on, okay, but mine don't even have pockets. So what have you on you at the moment? Because, you know, we are at home, we are not in outdoor, so I still have my watch, my ring, I have a necklace, and that's it. So what's it for you, just for fun? So what are you wearing at the moment?
Wearing-wise?
Yeah, what do you have on, yes. On you.
Well,
on EDC.
I've got my Truvax wallet, mm-hmm. which is generally the wallet that I take everywhere with me.
Nice.
Been given lots of nice wallets, but it's the minimal kind of... Yeah. style that I like, so I will always generally tend to go back to that. My wristwatch at the moment, I'm wearing my Garmin Solar 2X. It's such a mouthful. Garmin, yeah. Instinct 2X Solar Tactical Edition, yeah. which I love. I wear this all the time. Oh, nice.
Okay, I think really brother from another mother. Well, I just have the Instinct one, the normal one, but these are just great watches. Okay, perfect. Yes,
they are. And weirdly, I'll never use the Halo Jump or any of the features on here.
Of course not.
I like it because of the color. Like the color over some of the others.
Yeah.
Whereas for a light, I have my.
This is huge.
The mm-hmm. Olight Javelot, which mm-hmm. I really like. This is the new one that came out this year. And then the knife is the bench. I forget what this one is called.
Oh, but it's nice.
It's a Benchmade one.
Benchmade. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I completely forgot what it was called.
Yeah, but either way, but yeah, you're well equipped. You've got something kind of in your pocket, man.
Yeah,
you have a very, very well stuffed pant.
Yeah, that's it, and a tight belt to make sure that my pants don't fall down.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, okay. And yeah, that's like everyone should carry, you know. Okay, guys, boys, listen up. Yeah, if you go out, you have your wallet, you have your watch, you have your knife, and you're good to go.
that's it. I think it's. A knife is such a useful tool. A lot of people, knives have been demonized here in the UK. There's just no way around that.
Yeah.
But they're just so useful. Even a Swiss Army knife, yes. or Victorinox. Anybody can pull out a Swiss Army knife, yes. and people are just like, oh, it's just a Swiss Army knife.
Yeah, but
the actual mm-hmm. little tools that are on there, just to do extra little bits and stuff. Super useful.
It is. The thing is, I carry a knife every day, any day, every day. Mm. Sometimes because I changed my pants or I was traveling and I needed to you know, put out all my knives and I don't have my knife with me, then I realize how often I use it. When I have it with me all the time, I don't use it like every day. But be sure, if I am out of knives or I don't carry a knife, then you need it. And so this is always the situation.
You feel naked without it, don't you?
It is.
I feel absolutely useless as a man that I can't do whatever I need to do because I've left my knife at home.
Yeah, I'm sure. And it's like this, yes. You also said that you are still interested in tactical gear. Like in military, like not only surplus gear, but tactical gear. How did that came from? Or where did this come from?
Just my fascination with the military. I've always been fascinated with the military ever since I was young. I have my own nearly joined kind of story, but everything. I think with a lot of the backpacks.
Yeah.
Mainly it started with the backpacks.
Yeah.
Because my dad would often get more of the military backpacks rather than the just like the backpacking backpacks, just yeah. Rather than going for Osprey,
yeah,
he would go for 511.
Yeah, I see.
Mm-hmm. So it started with that. So I've always had a bit of a fascination with it.
Yeah.
But then working with companies like Tasmanian Tiger, yeah, or Helican Tex, it's like, oh, I know you like these backpacks, but what do you think about these chest rigs?
Yes.
Or what do you think about these plate carriers?
Yeah.
And just that small child again in me is like,
and it's like,
please.
Yep.
You try and act really cool, and just like, oh yeah, I've thought about maybe doing something with those, but secretly inside you're like, yes, send me one of every color.
Yeah, of course, it is like this, and it's like, and I think, you know, the saying I just told, like, with the boys, and it is like this, you know. Yeah. Today when I received my new gear, we talked on before it, I had like a new issued gear. I was at home sitting there, like putting all the pouches in the right place and thinking about it and putting this one that way. And also in my mind, I just like did repairs on it. Like, how can I make it better and stuff like this?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it is very close to play. It is something, mm-hmm. and don't call it childish. You know, playing is something. But, you know, having something new, like experience it, like getting to know it, like after that, use it and then enjoy it. That's something very, very cool. And I think that's what we all share, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's good for so many people to mm-hmm. have a hobby or an interest.
Exactly.
Because what it allows you to do is on the days when you've finished work and you've had a few shitty clients and you're like, and you turn around and you're like, do you know what, let's see if I can set my chest rig up in a different way, or I've had this plate carrier for all this time and I always set it up exactly like this, why don't I see if I can do it in a different manner instead?
That's always the next
item is.
That is, it's so fun talking with Martin about like, hey, I have a new fire kit, what do you think about it? And then I play cool. And say like, yeah, that's pretty good. You could be like this and that. And I said, oh, I have to update my fire kit. What is your water clarification kit? And I was like, I don't even have one. I just have like, but a purification kit, how cool is it? And you know, and it's getting deeper and deeper and deeper and optimizing it. And it's so fun. And I really enjoy it. You work with a couple of companies, and that's why I don't know if you can answer this question, but do you have a favorite one or a one you enjoy the most? Let's say it this way, perhaps.
That's a fair question. I mean, so I've been a Tasmanian Tiger ambassador mm-hmm. for the last 5 or 6 years, and I just love their gear.
Okay.
There's very little that I can pick faults with their gear.
Yeah.
And luckily they were one of the first companies that I got to work with when my channel was new.
Yeah.
So I've always got a soft spot for TT. Mm-hmm. Absolutely love their gear. And when at IWA every year, I make sure that I go and I spend some time on their stand.
Yeah.
For the channel, I certainly know that Helican Tex
mm-hmm.
is very well loved.
Yeah.
I think the team there really have got some great people working for them because they're making stuff that people actually want rather than just kind of stuff that they're rehashing or that sort of thing.
And with Helican Tex, I had a conversation about it and I have some friends, like some Gucci gear friends, and they're like, Helican Tex. And I think like, well, most of it's affordable. It's very affordable.
Yeah, totally.
It is well thought through.
Yep.
The quality is very good.
Mm-hmm.
And you have like a huge variety.
Yeah.
You can choose from t-shirts, even rebuilds of the PCU system, like the American one, till bushcraft gear to travel gear. And in my mind, So I got myself like I'm traveling a lot, and my favorite shirt is a Helicontex because that's the perfect one to put my passport in. You know, yeah. It has like the, and that's something like, not everything is perfect, but you find, and if you find the one, then it's really, really cool, and I enjoy it very much. Yeah.
Yeah, totally agree. I think what Helicontex are doing well is all of the bits that you mentioned there, and it is that Gucci gear kind of thing. I mean, it would be amazing if we could all run around in Carinthia or UF Pro, because I mean, that stuff is next level stuff.
Yeah,
but you can get something that's very similar, at an affordable price.
Yeah,
that you can use, that can you know you can get used to the gear, and then you can build on that if you want to at a later date once you've got a bit more money. But if you don't have a bit more money that you can put towards something from one of the bigger companies, then there's nothing wrong with staying with Helicontex, because the stuff that they make is it's good quality for the price as well.
Yeah, I think if everyone would wear Carinthia and everyone would wear UF Pro, nobody wants to wear it anymore. And this is the same thing, like with, you know, Gucci gear is like, it's like a good thing to say, because you be honest, do we need like a 300-pound combat pant or a 300 euro? What the difference it makes in performance is like this much. I just hold my finger up. It's not even an inch, it's not even a centimeter, you know? So it's small. And if you're carried through a street because the medic is carrying you out of a zone, even in training, then even the best pants will be ripped. So, And so I think, I heard a story, because in German army, there is something, you know, like now the normal soldier gets like very good equipment, and by showing this equipment, some of the SOF guys, but not like real special forces, but like the, let's say like ranger level, he raised his hand and said like, yes, but, how can I show that I'm different, that I'm better? Because, you know, everyone got the same equipment than like he did. And this was something that pissed him off off, because like, I want to be shown as a special guy with like special gear. And it's the same with the outdoor industry. Talking about expensive brands, what is your opinion about Through Dark?
I do like Through Dark.
Yeah.
I will say that they are rather expensive.
Really? They are.
Yeah.
I just ask you because yesterday, like at night at 10 o'clock, my neighbor sent me a text message like, what's your opinion about Through Dark? And I was like, because, you know, and we are all the same. I see like this brand, like they have like an image, like a logo.
Yeah.
I was like, what is it? And then you have like this good, well-made marketing website, you know. Yeah, we are ex-Special Forces guys. I think they're both ex-SAS members or something like that. And we are... Yeah,
is it Louis and Stas? I think the two guys that set up the company.
And here again, we have like pants, you know, around like £250 or something like that, €300. So, and did you had like a hands-on? Did you had hands-on this equipment so far?
Not properly. Uh-huh. The closest that I got to was this year when I went. We had an outdoor show at the NEC in Birmingham.
Yeah.
And I went there and had a look through the gear.
Yeah.
And it is very well made.
Mm-hmm.
And
in Italy, actually. I think that's what I read on the website.
Yeah, there's. I think there's different places where they make them. They try and keep a lot of the stuff here in Europe. Mm-hmm. To keep it made locally.
Yeah.
And it is the materials that they're using. What's the they're like infusing graphene into some of their trousers.
Yeah.
I think there's another one. What's the Oh, this is going to kill me now.
Is it tweef or something like that?
It's the material that they use in climbing ropes.
Oh, okay. But not Kevlar, so it's nothing like that, right?
I think it's similar to a Kevlar.
Yeah,
they're using that in the elbow pads.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
yeah.
Again, it's really nice stuff.
Yeah.
However, and I'm probably shooting myself in my foot saying this, just in case I do get to work with them one day.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the people that wear their gear,
yeah,
will probably be the guys that are in Manchester in a pub rather than going out into the moors and maybe using the gear out there.
Yeah.
That's kind of the impression they get a little bit from it.
Yeah. So it may be. So interestingly, did you, or do you know about the YouTube, but it's a German one. It's called Seven Versus Wild. Have you ever heard of it? It's like a pretty famous YouTuber. He's an outdoor YouTuber, and he made this show, and it's pretty big. So it was like even like that the normal media like came onto it. Like Seven Versus Wild, they have like 3 seasons already. And they tried different things. And actually, one of the girls, or they had like 2 women in the last season. And she wore this pants. And I was like, I heard from Through Dark, but it was like some years ago. And then I checked it out and I watched it with my wife. And she asked, like, what kind of pants is she wearing? Is it like motorcycle pants? Because they are very imageable, so that you see that's something interesting. And I checked it, Through Dark, okay, I understand. And then I remembered, and then I saw the price and said, like, okay, cancel this. But yeah. And another thing is, and this is what you said, like with drinking pub in Manchester, I was in Bavaria not long ago, and I saw a guy with the shorts from Through Dark and a 5'11 shirt and a 5'11 cap, and I was like, okay, but the rest of the body didn't fit the image.
we have a phrase over here. I'm sure you probably have something similar. It's all the gear but no idea.
Yeah. Yeah, it is like this. Yeah, 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 yeah. But either way, on the other hand side, I'm still happy about those guys, you know. Perhaps that's what you said. Like, even perhaps it's the imagination of when I buy this, because they don't have the idea or they don't have the time. They work too much, but they buy these things, you know, because this is their adventure. And next time when I go out, I have these pants, and you know, and you could make fun of it. That's always easy. But on the other hand side, perhaps that's their way to impress, you know, like something they want to do. Yeah. And then perhaps if this helps them to go out, then be my guest, even if it's on a walk, you know?
Yeah.
So
I think it comes back to that thing that you're saying before, the spirit of play, although they're not playing and they're dressing up, but they're playing through that. But if you can escape your normal day to day, and I mean, I run around playing airsoft, and it's like people are like, it's just LARPing. People want to LARP playing toy soldiers, and it's like, I know, but I've never said that I'm a soldier. It's fun. It gets me outside.
Yeah,
and it's a 6 or 7 hour day. I just get to do something different in the field and just have some fun.
That's actually also, you know, a lot of, well, I know a lot of soldiers that play airsoft or that do airsoft. Mm-hmm. And I'm always impressed for groups that like reenact, like in history, they see like, I think that's an US group. They reenact KSK, like German Special Forces, to the detail. Like they have the chest rig from 2010, the helmet from 2010, and everything. And I love the, you know, how they are in love with the detail. That's really great. And that they kind of, you know, embrace that. What I don't like, and this is something I just heard because I've never been on an event, if they act like they were special forces, you know. And this is like a thin line, you know, because in the end you're playing a game.
Yeah,
keep it that way, okay, and don't be that guy.
When
you know?
When the whole Ukraine thing started a few years back,
yeah,
I remember being at the an airsoft event and hearing a couple of guys, and they're like, "Well, if my passport was sorted and I got a passport, I'd be out there. I'd do this and I'd show Putin." It's like, no. There's no reset. There's no respawn.
Exactly.
It's not like playing Call of Duty. It's the real thing.
Yeah.
Those bullets really hurt. Really hurt.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And I'm sure in Ukraine, it is suffering because it's cold, wet. You're waiting all the time. You get the orders you don't want to. You always are on the run. So it's always the thing like, being on point, being on the run, like, you know, and then waiting, working. And then for a short period of time, then perhaps it's action. Mm-hmm. And action means that right and left, people are dying or yourself get hurt. Yeah. And suddenly it's not fun anymore. Yeah. And yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's actually the thing. Yeah. Yeah, very. Oh, we go pretty deep here. So, but it's always cool. But okay, back to airsoft. I think it's fun playing, and once again, and here we are. So, how is it in the UK with sports shooting or something like that? Is this also something you are interested in, or?
It was, yeah. So before COVID,
yeah,
I was a member of a club.
Okay.
But COVID kind of stopped that because I was working my way towards getting my rifle license, or so that I could get one myself to keep at home. There are a lot of shooting clubs through the UK, and it's a very popular thing.
Okay.
But it's very low key, because everyone's like, oh no, in the UK we don't own guns.
Okay.
Nobody owns guns. When
is it like this? So you can only have like the guns in the club, or what is it like?
So generally, well, as far as on land is concerned, generally you'll need to, like, you get a lot of farmers, and they'll have pests, they'll have rabbits, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So you can go to farmers and usually you can ask, do you mind if I go hunting on your land? You come back with 8 rabbits, 4 rabbits for you, 4 rabbits for me.
And everyone could do this without a license, just with the permission of the landowner, or?
As far as I'm aware, it may have changed recently, because I know there have been some changes to the rules, because randomly the government have said that then if somebody hunts on your land, if they hurt themselves, it's now the farmer's fault. So there's some changes to it.
Yeah, okay.
But as far as I'm aware, as far as licenses are concerned, you don't necessarily need a license to hunt.
Okay.
You do need a license to own a firearm, though. Mm-hmm. And there's 2 firearm licenses that we have. You either have a shotgun license, which the shotguns that we have are either side by side or over or unders. You can't. Yeah. There's no pump action shotguns or anything like that.
So hunting shotguns, obviously. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whereas, if I remember the shotguns, you need to have the full, I forget what it's called, but the full rifle license.
Yeah, okay.
But with a rifle license, they're a lot harder to get. You need to make sure that it's kept in a cabinet that's in your house, and the cabinet has to be nailed to the wall.
Yeah, I see.
If it's not, the police, they won't let you, and you have to keep your ammunition and your rifle separate.
Yes. So it's very regulated, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We have limits on... kind of have limits on calibers as well. So if it's a 22 long rifle, you can have semi-automatic, but anything larger than 22 long rifle, it has to be manually to be manually loaded every single time.
Okay.
So you could theoretically own an AK,
yeah,
but you have to manual you have mm-hmm. I have to manually chamber every single round when you're shooting with that.
Yeah.
So we do have a lot of clubs all over the UK where you can go and you can sport shoot, you can distance shoot, you can do all of that sort of stuff. If you theoretically wanted to own a 50 BMG, you could do that and you could go to a range and you could shoot that. But you'd need to make sure that it's gone through the police, that you're there's criminal background checks sort of stuff to make sure that everything's okay.
So when you did it, I guess you enjoyed it. Was it something you could go into, or is it because I'm asking because, like, you know, being a soldier, shooting was, I was never a big like into shooting. So it was something I did. Yeah. I kind of enjoyed, but shooting in military is most of the time is waiting, or when you get a higher rank, then it's like training or it's like supervising. So you know, it's, and we should say also shooting is fun. So, or it can be fun.
It is,
so,
yeah.
And I tried it here in a civilian club and it was boring as because it was like shooting from 25 meters and every week again. And it was something, you know, when I enjoy, or, you know, I enjoy shooting when targets are falling, you know, when something happens, when I hit the target or when I'm moving or, you know, this is what, and in the end, yes, it is a weapon and safety is number one, no doubt about it, but still it can make fun. So, and this is something I totally miss. And so for me, it's not the sport of choice, or perhaps you need some very cool guys, good guys, you know, with the same level, like safety is always number one, but let's have fun with this sport. Yeah. So what was it for you doing this? Yeah.
So the range that I joined was a very kind of, I think it was like that one that you first mentioned. Everything was 20, 25 meters.
Yeah.
Everyone is sitting in rows. But it's useful to join a club that's almost like a starter like that, because you need to be a member of a club for, say, 6 months and gone X amount of times so that you can get your license. But after that, you put in your license to the police and you just tick every caliber. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to, you could just go, no, I only want a license for 22 long rifle, and that's all you're allowed to own.
Yeah.
But you take every caliber, and then you can go and if you wanted to, you could join doing two gun tournaments, three gun tournaments, all of that sort of stuff. So like you see in a lot of these American ones where they've got the different ranges and you've got to make sure you're hiding behind things and all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Finding the right club, and if there's a club close to you that you can do that, you can still do that here in the UK.
Yeah.
Our pistol rules are actually quite laughable. Pistols in the UK are pretty much illegal.
Okay.
Because of a lot of homegrown terrorists that we had during the 80s and the 90s. They were pretty much outlawed.
Yeah.
But you can still own pistols as long as they're heavily modified. If you ever get a chance, and the people that are listening now, just Google UK legal pistol.
Yeah.
And the monstrosity that you'll see, hopefully when you finish laughing and you've gone, Jesus Christ, is that really what the British have got to now? You'll see what we have to do to pistols to be able to use those in shooting clubs. But again, so if you were in a club and there's like a three gun competition, then you can still use those modified pistols. But I'd love it, and I think again it goes back to being a young man. I can't remember who gave it to me, but I was given an air rifle as a present.
Yeah.
So we used to go into the village, we'd go and buy like a box of 500 lead pellets.
Yeah.
And me and my brother, we'd sit in the garden for 2 days straight. All of my mum's roses, we'd shoot the heads off the roses. All of the flowers in the gardens, they were all shot. There was like a whole massacre of Lego men, G.I. Joes, turtles. Just, I'm sure if you, I do, I love your t-shirt. If you went into my mum and dad's back garden now and maybe dug down by about a foot, it was like you were going through the Jurassic period and you could almost see levels where me and my brother destroyed all of these toys that we'd got.
Yeah.
So I do quite like that kind of marksmanship side of it.
Yeah.
And again, just turning off. Just don't think of anything. Just be in a place. There's you. There's the target, and you just kind of chill for a bit.
Yeah, it can be very frustrating if you don't find, you know, because as you said, and this was my imagine when I joined the club here. I wanted to do like distance shooting, like, you know, other guys go to the golf court on Sunday morning, and I wanted to go just, you know, shooting with my rifle for like, but like 300 meters and beyond. Because this is something I just experienced in a very, very small amount of time, even in military. But this is something, but on the other hand side, it's so damn expensive. If you go into like distance shooting, like like 1,000 yard or 1,000 meters shooting, then you could also buy a car, you know, a new one.
Yeah, and it's the same as petrol nowadays, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's great if you're going to go and pick up a 50-22 long rifle because it costs you a few euros. But when you're going and picking up something else and you're like, wow, is that about €7 per bullet? And you're like, yeah, that's about right now. Wow.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's something, but, you know, in my head, it sounded like a good plan. Talking about some what I would interested in, like some like British companies you also know, and I've seen on your channel, because there's one specific brand that I'm now, I think like for 10 years ago, I read about it in a magazine. And since then I wanted to have a jacket from them. It's Paramo. And you had like a smock from them or like a jacket.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
And they have the, I think it's called Pajero jacket or something like that. I just Googled it. Pajero, the men's Pajero jacket or like the Halston jacket.
Yeah.
You tested some of them. So what was your experience from this brand?
For me, Paramo really are at the top of the game here in the UK. There's a few different companies. Paramo, Rab is another one, which I think they originally started off in Scotland.
Yeah.
But I've done some days walking where, you know, I've been out with some buddies and one's been in Gore-Tex, one's been in Event, and we've all been soaked through.
Yeah.
Whereas the guy that went out in the Paramo or... They got one of the Paramo gilets on underneath, and they got back and their arms were wet and their legs were wet, and they took the gilet off and everything underneath was just bone dry.
Wow.
The combination, because I've actually learned a little bit around, because whenever you get Paramo, you'll always see that it's impregnated with Nick Wax, and they use the Tech Watch stuff. So I think from what I've learned, they're originally one of the same company, and then they split to kind of go separate ways.
But
they've always worked together. I love their gear.
So
and it's also not too expensive as well.
Yeah,
it's a higher tier.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's certainly not as cheap as some other brands.
Yeah,
but again, once you've got that, they're good. The only difficulty is that the maintenance with them is just a little bit higher than some other brands.
Yeah, okay.
Where you might be able to bring something that's Gore-Tex. I know you wouldn't necessarily put it in the washing machine, but you could just give it a good wash, and then you could go out, maybe reproof it.
Yeah.
With Paramo, the reproofing process with the Tech Wash, and then kind of going through that afterwards, it does take a little bit more to kind of maintain them, but they'll last you for years.
The thing I read, and back then I was fascinated by, is the thing is like, the have you heard of the Pajero jacket? Did you know? know this, it's like, it looks like a barber, like a little bit, like the cut from a barber jacket, like with like big pockets.
Yeah, I think and, I know the one. It's like an old-fashioned army smock.
Exactly. And it looks like this. And the thing, what, you know, first of all, this cool color is like moss green. Now they have like in green. Back then it was just moss green. And the material is not waterproof. And that's what they say. They say like in Scotland, or in, if you are in the Highlands, or if you are hiking, and you're, and obviously Great Britain is famous for good weather, so
we love the rain. Yes. If there's one thing we do here, we do rain really well.
And what I was fascinated was first that it was more like a smock, because you, huge pockets, like you could put like a thermos into it, and on all your, so that's what the advertising said, and your binos and your maps, and they said like, and I was like, that's something they really got through. They said, like, you cannot be completely dry, whether you are wet because you're walking, or you're wet, you know, because something got through. And so they did it with like huge ventilation openings.
Yeah.
And that they say, like, it dries very fast. And this was something like from the mindset, like, okay, being wet is being wet, but after that, it dries really good. This is something I was really interested in. I'm still am on. And I tell you what, I am so pissed about the Brexit. not only from my heart, because...
Me too.
Yeah, honestly, it is something, you know, I love Great Britain, everything about it. And I think Germans and Britons, well, some say not, but I think... You know, Anglo-Saxon, this is something, you know, it is together. So we are closer then, and I don't want to, you know, I say it in fun, but French are different, Italians are different. And I don't think, I don't want to say that it's bad, but you know, like sometimes the humor of the British is even darker, but we can relate to this very good. So we're very close. And so it cut this part from my heart, you know, with the Brexit situation. And I'm very, very sorry about it. And even more because... It's so much cool stuff you have over there, and it's so hard to get it. And I'm so well. My wife is happy, of course, because I don't buy that much. But
you've got more money in your bank account now.
Yeah, it is. But it is really, really a pity. And hopefully, come back in our arms, or we. I want you back. Yeah.
If I had my way, we wouldn't have left. I think there were a lot of lies that were told to the British.
I'm sure.
And I genuinely do think that as a you don't see the Icelandic people going, we don't want to be part of Europe because we're an island on our own in the North Sea.
Yeah.
They don't have an issue with that.
Exactly.
And I just don't understand why some Britons have an issue with it, considering we are so closely related
exactly
to the people on the continent.
Yeah, it is indeed.
Yeah,
it's that. Going over to, we talk now for like a good hour, but I still have some questions. So in your first video, and this would be like the last topic. In the first video, you mentioned that you travel a lot. Is this still so that you travel a lot, like business-wise?
Since Brexit, I've got Brexit stuck in the brain now. Since COVID, it has reduced a little bit, mainly because the industry that I work in. So I work in and around pharmaceuticals. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we get a lot of doctors. We might get, say, a big pharmaceutical company. They release a new drug and all of the doctors go to this star. It's like the Oscars. Yeah, yeah. Come and see our drug. It's amazing. All that sort of stuff. So we work with the pharmaceutical companies to help them to create these events. Since COVID, they've all realized that everybody can just get on Teams. We can all do this.
Yeah.
And, it doesn't happen as much. Before COVID, I'd probably travel, say, 5 or 6 times a year through Europe. Since COVID, maybe a couple of times, but it's still nice. I still get to go to some nice places.
Yeah, that is nice. So I'm traveling quite it is okay, still okay. But I had a chance to travel also for my business or for my job. And then here again, the EDC travel thing is still something I need to check out, because like when you're business wise on the way or on traveling, and I prefer to have everything like in a like in one pack just. So my go-to is the GORUCK GR2. That's what I'm using at the moment, and I really really enjoy it. So what would be like if you said from the top of your head the top tips, things to carry when traveling? I know it's a tough question, but let's make it easy, because it's even that simple. Like for me, finding the right shoes, you know, was something quite hard, because what I want to do is I want to put out my boots or my shoes, and I don't want my neighbor to just fall over because, you know, I sweat it all in, and you know, I have sweaty feet, but when I wear like wool socks and leather shoes, everything is okay. It's not a problem at all. Having like comfortable pants where you can sit a long time, perhaps sleep in it. That's something really important. So perhaps you can share some tips like from the top of your head.
Yeah. Well, one of them, I think you've already ticked off the box, and that's with your GORUCK GR2, mainly because there's handles all around that, isn't there? Little things for me that when I find a backpack and I think I'm going to travel with this will make a great backpack, is does it have a grab handle on the top,
on the bottom,
on the sides, and one on the bottom? Because you're there, you've just got out of Charles de Gaulle, you're trying to get your bag out of the back of somebody's taxi, and you know that there's people behind you probably swearing at you in French because you've not been fast enough. So it's little things like that. Merino wool socks. Merino wool socks for traveling are the best, because you can sweat in them as much as possible and you're not going to annoy whoever you sat next to. Weirdly, on that kind of tactical pants side, a lot of those tactical pants have that kind of diamond shaped bit in the gusset, don't they? Which makes sitting down for hours on end so much better. And plus, if you've got somebody that's next to you that won't stand up every single time you need to go to the toilet, you have to kind of climb over them. Just having extra freedom of movement to be able to get over them so much easier as well. And then little things like when you get through to security and you've got your camera, maybe you've got your laptop, all of that sort of stuff. Having I've got it right next to me, because I'm fine. So I keep these like packing cube kind of things. So this one is four of my tech stuff. So that it's all kind of compartmentalized, so that when they go, oh, you need to take this off, it's just right, okay, there you go. It's easier to take off and it's easier to go through. I think for me the biggest thing to make traveling easier is, one, make it easy for yourself so that you can be as comfortable as possible whilst you're traveling. But for all of those points where you have to stop and go, right, okay, here's this, here's that, here's these other things. I also carry a lot of... Whenever I travel, I always carry a small bag like this. Do you know
Venting? Yeah. I know this. It's like a fanny pack, right?
Yeah, that's it. So if I've got a backpack on, then rather than having to put everything back in my backpack every time I'll do something, then I'll always have one of these small bags, so that there's all of your stuff as well. It's all of that thinking about the points in which whilst you're traveling where you've got to stop and you've got to get something out to give it to somebody, making that as easy as possible, because there's always going to be somebody behind you kind of groaning that you're not being fast enough, because there's some important businessman that nobody cares about.
Yeah. So, and this is, and so thank you for this. This is just great, because for me, it's kind of the same. First of all, I want to be comfortable, of course. And on the other hand side, I don't want to annoy nobody, because you're very close, and it's everyone is stressed on the airport. Everyone, because even if you're used to traveling you know, relaxing on an airport, it's not a place. And on the plane, you're very close to people, of course. So not stinking is a major issue. So and not annoy anybody is another one. Like, yeah. And also, you know, something like, and if you have like kids on the plane, they are loud. So a good ear protection. Mm-hmm. And kids are loud. It is like this. But when you're in this stress situation and, you know, or somebody is snoring, I snore probably, I don't know, but, you know, then...
I'm a massive snorer. But I can be downstairs and Mrs. Morlander will be asleep upstairs and she can hear me snoring downstairs.
Yeah, but for Mrs. Morlander, it's like white noise and she can't live without it, so it's okay. So tell her that. So, yeah, but these are...
It's like violins, beautiful violins playing in her ears when I'm asleep at night.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, but that's the thing while traveling. And rule number one, always look cool. Rule number two, never get lost. And rule number three, if you get lost, always look cool. That's still something.
Yeah, that's always. Exactly.
Randy, it was really, really fun talking to you. I really enjoyed it. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me on. Hopefully next time I'm in Germany, if you're at IWA when Martin is.
I hope so. I hope so. This is the plan. So we will meet there. This would be great. And perhaps if you have the time, we make, you know, perhaps a more themed, you know, show. This would be great too. So we can talk like one episode all about backpacks, the other episode all about watches and stuff like that. This would be really fun. So once again, if you want to check out Randy's channel, it's Morlander EDC. You're active, of course, on YouTube. You're also active on Instagram, but it's still, but like YouTube is like your main channel and Instagram is more for supporting it, or what is the thing there?
Yes, I forgot what I was going to say then for a second. Sorry about that. Yes, you're right. I generally tend to be on YouTube a little bit more, whereas Instagram is where I'll just put little bits that I kind of find that I think are cool and just kind of put them out there. But it's mainly just going, you know, there's a new video that's kind of live.
Yeah, okay. Great. Yeah. So thank you for your content. And as I said, it's great meeting you, meeting a brother from another mother. And it is like this. It's great. And I'm looking forward to meeting you in person. And until then, I will say thank you. And for all you guys listening, thank you very much for listening to us. And we meet us next time. Thanks, Randy.
Yeah. Thank you very much.